Okay, good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome back to Parsha Perspectives for today. The privilege of learning together Parshas Lech Lecha, action pack. Parshas Lech Lecha, the trick is not to figure out what to say, it's to figure out what not to say. Every part of the Parsha, every piece of the narrative is so filled with depth, with meaning, and with lessons for today. So we'll dive right in. But first, of course, as always, our gratitude. Thank you to our series sponsors, Becky and Avi Katz and family, in memory of David Grossman. Our learning should be L'Ili Nishmas, David ben Menachem Manush. This morning's shiur is sponsored by Amanda Lyons. A thank you for the weekly learning. For Shlema Chayaleya Bas Mary, and for all those who were affected by the terrible attack that took place in Manchester over Yom Kippur, they should have a speedy, complete, and painless refuah Shalema. Parshas Lech Lecha. We're going to open up with three insights by Rabbi Sachs. The new Chumash, I understand, is now available. I highly recommend it, and I get no commission from it. Pure recommendation for everyone. Parshas Lech Lecha, page 54 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash. I hope everybody enjoys. I mentioned those who come in person get an extra gift. We produced my son's bar mitzvah this past Shabbos, Nachla Shai, his name is Shai, the inheritance of Shai. It's made up of three parts, but the bulk of it is our write-ups of Parsha Perspectives. No, you can't order it, and we won't send it to you. It's only for the people who come in person. We didn't produce enough for the whole shul or for the whole world. Just a few for our family and for the simcha and for the people who loyally come in person to Parsha Perspective. You get not only coffee or a slushy or a pastry, but hopefully you walk away with more insight on the Parsha as well, Hebrew side and English side. So please take one before you leave. Page 54 in the Earth Scroll Stone Chumash. Vayomer Hashem al Avram, lech lecha me'aretzcha me'mladetcha me'beis avicha el ha'aretz asher ar'eka. We now transition, as we saw last week, from the opening 11 prakim, the stories of Parshas Bereishis and Noach, universal all of man, the failure of man, violating the very purpose and creation of the world, to now the one who gets it, the honor society of Hashem's classroom, Avram Avinu. And we begin, not at the beginning of his life, but we begin already into his life. The story has already started, which is a question into itself we won't address today. Why are we only introduced to Avram at an advanced age? Not that advanced, relax, but an advanced age. He's not young, let's put it that way. And the Torah omits some of those early stories, even though we're familiar with them, of course, destroying his father's idol shop, and so on. So I want to begin with Rabbi Sachs's introduction to the Parsha, and several insights that he has that I think are all magnificent. Number one, tradition offers several explanations of how Avram and Sarah's journey began. How did this story begin? According to one, Avram was the iconoclast who broke his father's idols. We all know that story, right? His father went on his lunch break, he put Avram in charge. Avram smashed and destroyed all the idols, put the hammer in the hand of the largest idol. When his father returned, he said, "What happened?" He said, "What do you mean what happened? The big idol killed all the little idols." His father said, they're stoned. What are you talking about? What happened? He said, exactly. If it can't even destroy all the smaller stones, rocks, then why are you bowing down and worshiping? Why do you think it could do anything else? Avram Avinu used his common sense and his logic in order to discover. According to another, he was the philosopher who, seeing people worship the sun and stars, asked, but who created them? He looked around, he saw people bowing down and worshiping nature, and he said, nature is indeed a powerful force. Just look at the hurricane that's forming, I think a category 5, hopefully not headed our way. Nature is a powerful force. So, but the people who bow down and worship nature, but who created nature? And the Medrash has a third and altogether more radical reading. The Medrash says, Hashem told Avram, go, lech. To what may this be compared to a man who was traveling from place to place when he saw a palace in flames? He wondered, is it possible the palace lacks an owner? Obviously, this palace, this home, this magnificent edifice didn't come onto its own. It must have an owner, an architect, a builder. The owner of the palace looked out and said, I'm the owner. So Avram, our father said, is it possible the world lacks a ruler? The Ribbono Shel looked out and he said, I'm the ruler, the sovereign of the universe. This is a deeply enigmatic passage, says Rabbi Sachs. Avram sees a palace. The world has order and therefore it has a creator. But the palace is in flames. So the first thing Avram saw, philosophers call this the first cause argument and one of the pieces of evidence of Hashem's existence. There is no absolute proof. This is not the Amunashir. We'll save it for another time. But there is no absolute proof that there is a God. And there's a reason. That's by design. Because if it were undeniable, if there were absolute proof, what would we be deprived of? What would we be denied of? What would we not have? Free will. Free will is the essence of creation. It's the essence of life. The fact that we make choices. And with our choices, we draw closer or we recoil and retreat further away. Our choices are what give meaning. And if Hashem was provable, absolutely, we would be deprived. We would have no free will. Without free will, there's no purpose for life. So Hashem created a world in which He still takes an element of a leap of faith. But we have enough evidence to know He exists, as much evidence as we have of anything else. You don't know that coming here today, crossing the street or getting in your car or pouring yourself a cup of coffee, that something lethal wasn't going to happen to you. But you compile the evidence, and the evidence tells you the pattern, the history, it tells you it's probably safe to drink the coffee. If I look both ways, I don't have to worry I have a blind spot and I'm going to get hit by a car. I don't have to fear that my brakes are going to malfunction. The medicine I picked up at the pharmacy is probably not laced with something lethal. We have evidence, and every day we lead our lives based on the preponderance of evidence we've collected, even though we have no absolute proof. And I would elaborate, but we neither have the time, nor do I want to make you neurotic and give you anxiety. But if you actually consider how little proof we have for many of the major things we do. I have two children taking off on planes this morning, to New York and one to Israel. How do you know getting on a plane? I'm not even going to finish the sentence. But we have evidence. And the evidence we collect is that there are authorities, they do reviews, there are safety checks. All the decisions we make from the moment we wake up in the morning until we fall asleep at night are based not on absolute proof, they're based instead on the preponderance of evidence. And that same threshold of the preponderance of evidence exists, that there is a Hashem. And that's why the Torah doesn't expect or ask us to take a leap of faith to believe. It tells us we can know. With the same degree of confidence, with the same amount of evidence, we can know. The word the Torah uses over and over again is to know. Don't take a leap of faith. You don't have to believe. Belief and leap of faith is something someone does for something imaginary. But Hashem is not imaginary. And if you just look with no bias, if you just examine the evidence objectively, you will conclude and you will see the preponderance. You will have the same threshold of evidence that you have for the other decisions we make in life. So one of those pieces of evidence is what's called the first cause, which is that I look back and I come from my parents who come from their parents who come from their parents, but if I trace that back all the way, where did it all begin? And even if you conclude it began with a Big Bang, Dr. Gerald Schroeder argues for how you can reconcile the Big Bang and Sefer Bereishis in his book, wonderful book, Genesis and the Big Bang. They're not necessarily in conflict. You can reconcile them. Who created, who launched that Big Bang? So the first cause. There's another piece of evidence, which is that the third law of thermodynamics is that order goes to disorder, to chaos. Your cup of coffee, when you leave it too long, gets cold. The water molecules spread out, no longer retains the heat, and it gets cold. Fruit and vegetables, they decay. People get old. We decay. We become infirm. Order goes to disorder naturally. Whenever you see disorder become organized, you know there's a creator, there's a designer. Nature, order goes to disorder. When you see disorder become organized, it means there was a creator. The Chumash sitting in front of you is not because ink spilled on it and we got the result of this text. There is instead a publisher and a printer and, of course, a divine author. Every building had an architect and a builder. Every sculpture, a sculptor. Every artwork, an artist. Even though some artwork goes for a lot of money that looks like paint accidentally spilled on it. That's because I'm just unsophisticated. I don't appreciate, apparently, what looks like kindergarten artwork to me. But we'll leave that aside for another time. So Avram Avinu, the Medrash is telling us, sees a palace. A palace can't lack an owner. It didn't just come to be. The materials, there wasn't a hurricane that whipped this palace into shape. There was an architect and a designer. But why does the Medrash? All that was a long-winded way of explaining the Medrash. Avram came to the conclusion, this third suggestion is, because he saw the world as no less than a palace. If a palace has an architect and a builder, then the world too is not accidental or random. But why does the Medrash describe that the palace is in flames? So listen to what Rabbi Sacks says. The world is full of disorder, of evil, violence, and injustice. Now, no one builds a building and then deserts it. If there's a fire, there must be someone. There must be someone to put it out. The building must have an owner. If so, where is he? That is the question, and it gives Avram no peace. With this, we arrive at the starting point of Jewish faith. Faith is born not in the answer, but in the question. Not in the harmony, but in the dissonance. Avram doesn't just see a palace, he sees it on fire. And he says, no one builds a building and abandons it and leaves it and lets it be destroyed and allows it to go up in flames, where's the owner? It's a question that irks him, that bothers him. And he's stimulated by that question to search for answers. And that is the starting point of Jewish faith. If Hashem created the world, why does he allow man to destroy it? Can Hashem have made the world only to abandon it? From time immemorial to the present, there have always been two ways of seeing the world. The first view says there is no God. There are contending forces, chance and necessity. The chance that produces variation, the necessity that gives the strong victory over the weak. From this perspective, the evolution of the universe is inexorable and blind, and therefore we never know why. There is no why. There's no palace. All we see are flames. But the second view insists there's a Hashem, there's a creator. All that exists or transpires does so because he willed it. Therefore, all injustice is an illusion. Perhaps the world itself is an illusion. When the innocent suffer, it teaches them to find faith through suffering, the soul's strength through the body's torments. Evil is the cloak that masks the good. There is a question, but there's always an answer. For if we could understand Hashem, we would know that the world is as it is because it would be less good word otherwise. There is a palace, therefore there are no flames. The faith of Avram begins in the refusal to accept either answer. Suppose both Hashem and evil exist. Suppose there are both the palace and the flames. It is in that cry, that sacred discontent, that Avram's journey begins. And the heart of reality is a contradiction between order and chaos that has no resolution at the level of thought, can only be resolved at the level of action, only by making the world other than it is. To be a Jew is to have the courage to refuse easy answers, to reject either consolation or despair. Hashem exists, therefore life has purpose. Evil exists, therefore we have not yet achieved that purpose. Until then, we must travel just as Avram and Sarah traveled to begin the task of shaping a different kind of world. What haunts us about the Medrash is not just Avram's question, but Hashem's reply. He answers, I am here, without explaining the flames. He doesn't attempt to put out the fire. It's as if instead he was calling for help. Hashem made the building. Man set it on fire. Only man can put out the flames. Avram asks Hashem, where are you? Hashem says, I am here. Where are you? Man asks Hashem, why did you abandon me? So begins a dialogue between earth and heaven, which has not ceased for 4,000 years. In these questions, which only the other can answer, Hashem and man find one another. Perhaps only together can they extinguish the flames. What an introduction to the Parsha, to Avram Avinu, to this Medrash. We ask Hashem, where are you? He says, where are you? We saw that with Avram, Ayeka. We saw that with Cain. Are you your brother's keeper? Where were you? Where is your brother? And Avram is the one who now, when he asks Hashem and Hashem reciprocates and he points the question back on him, Avram becomes the Avram on Goyim. He becomes Avram forever. Why? Because he becomes the answer. He takes achrayas. He takes responsibility. He doesn't shirk. He doesn't point fingers. He doesn't pivot. He doesn't blame. He steps up, steps in. He becomes Avram Avinu. We see that. That is the theme of our entire parsha. Whether it's stepping up, help rescue his wife, rescue his nephew Lot, the war of the four kings and the five kings, argue even on behalf of the evil people of Sodom, he continuously and consistently steps up. Yes, the palace is in flames. Man lit it on fire, and man has to put it out, and Avram is ready to do so. And that's how the story begins. Hashem tells Avram, Lech, Lecha, go. Translate the word Lech, Lecha. Lech, go. What is the word Lecha? You could translate it a lot of different ways, which lend a lot of different meaning. So Rabbi Sachs writes, in Hebrew, the suggestive phrase is Lech, Lecha. Literally, go for yourself. Possibly, go to yourself. A more midrashic interpretation takes the phrase to mean go, lech lecha el, go with yourself. Meaning, by traveling from place to place, you will extend your influence not over one land, but of many. And there's a beautiful medrash in Bereishis Rabbah that says this. It describes go, me'artzacham u'mladetcham beis avicha, from your birthplace, your land, your father's house. What did Avram resemble? L'mad davar doma wonders the medrash, to a jar of scent. A jar of perfume, a jar with a pleasant fragrance, with a tight-fitting lid put away in a corner, so the fragrance never spread. As soon as it was moved from that place and opened, now the fragrance began to spread. So too Hashem said to Avram, Avram, it's wonderful you discovered me. Don't keep this secret to yourself. Lech, lecha, go with yourself, travel from place to place, so the greatness of your name will go forth in my world. Avram is commanded to leave his place in order to testify to the existence of Hashem, not bounded by place, creator and sovereign of the entire universe. Avram and Sarah, listen to this bracha. Listen to this tefillah. Listen to this charge for every one of us. Avram and Sarah are to be like perfume, leaving a trace of their presence wherever they go. Implicit in this measure is the idea the fate of the first Jews always prefigured that of their descendants. We would be scattered around the world to spread the knowledge of Hashem. Part of the diaspora, the gullus, part of being spread all over, it's time to go home, of course, but part of the mission of those who are still waiting and planning for that time is to understand why are we there, what's our purpose, what's our mission, not to live in retreat, not to ever be apologetic or defensive, to be proud, practicing Jews, to spread our fragrance and our perfume, to let the world know that Jews were here and they left a pleasant fragrance. They made it a better place. Lech, we have a mission. Go out and pursue it. And Lech, what's the mission? Lech, lecha. Go not only for yourself and not only to yourself, go with yourself. Bring your energy. Bring your you wherever you go. Topic of our Shabbat Shiva Drasha just a few weeks ago was this, ego versus Elokus. When we're out there trying to make a difference, when we're trying to have influence, as an influencer, not as an influencer, but influence the world positively, we're doing so not out of ego. It's not about us, our name, our followers, our power, our likes, our income. It's not about us. We're not doing it out of ego. We're doing it out of Elokus. That's the mission, Avram. Yes, Avram, it's more comfortable, it's more convenient staying in your home, studying your Torah, discovering and living with me, offering your hospitality, doing your chesed. That's comfortable, that's convenient. That's lovely, but that's not why you're here. Your purpose, your mission, your why is lech lecha. Go with yourself all over and spread that light, spread that knowledge, spread that energy, spread that good. Transform and repair and redeem my world. Jews are not meant to live in retreat, in an ivory tower, in isolation. Judaism is not just for Jews. The Torah and Yiddishkeit and Judaism have what to say for the entire world. A world increasingly confused and lost, Judaism has succeeded enormously in that mission. Avram, who promoted ethical monotheism, transformed the globe. This country credits Judeo-Christian values, which are Judeo values. The Declaration of Independence is laced with language that comes from the Torah. Don't take it from me, it's what the Founding Fathers said when it was written. The majority of the globe today, Christians, Muslims, and a handful of Jews. Muslims are monotheistic, technically not Avodah Zarah according to the Rambam. Christianity, according to many, is Avodah Zarah, but at least even the Rambam, who sees it as such, says it's a step in the right direction. They believe in our God also. That also is a problem. But it begins with belief in our God. Avram was and is successful, and we carry and pick up the baton, and that's our purpose in this confused world, to teach what it means, time, marriage, love, what it means, intimacy, what it means, the responsibility and the role of money and materialism. Judaism is meant to shape and mold the whole world, not only us. That's the lech lecha Rav Sacks is describing. Lech lecha, not just go for yourself, not just go to yourself to discover who you are, go with yourself. With your energy, with your talent, with your bracha, with who you are, bring that and share that with the world. I mentioned in Shabbat Shuvah, I struggle with this. You know, when you want to get to the next level, when you want to elevate your classes or have them reach farther or further or more people, is that ego or Elokus? You want your articles to appear more places. Is that ego, or is that because you're an ambassador, an agent? You're sharing the message of Hashem. Every day in that struggle, and I spoke to many people I admire and love, one of them, Rabbi Y.R. Jacobson, my friend, and I asked him how he navigates that tension, and he shared with me from the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zchus Yagen Aleinu, who said that when Hashem tells Avram at the beginning of our parsha, Va'agad la shemecha, I'll make your name great. So I'll make your name great. The simple understanding of I'll make your name great is I'll make your name great. You'll become a household name, which we now are, which he now is. How many homes across the globe have never heard of Abraham, or as President Trump likes to call him, Avraham, Abraham, whichever formulation he uses. I mean, just think about how the president stood in Egypt with dozens of world leaders behind him at a summit that the whole world is focused on, referencing over and over again the Avraham Accords, invoking Avram's name. I'll make your name great. Everyone's talking about Avraham. And please God to expand these accords and more countries join them and more peace, a real, legitimate, lasting peace. Avraham, va'agad la shemecha. We are living and we are watching and we are seeing the fulfillment of that promise. Va'agad la shemecha. That Avram's name is made great. It is a household name, a recognized name. It is the name of these accords. It's the name on the lips of every world leader. But said the Lubavitcher Rebbe, va'agad la shemecha, maybe it means something else or another layer of meaning. Va'agad la shemecha. Hashem says, the way I'll be great is when your name is known. Va'agad la, I'll be great, shemecha. So you hesitate, Goldberg, said Rabbi YY. You just want to sit in a corner, teach your class, stream it. Why are you streaming it? Don't post it. Don't advertise it. Don't promote it. Whoever shows up, you'll learn with one or two other people. No, Hashem says, va'agad la, the only way I can be great is shemecha. When the Jewish people names are great, when the individuals among them, not only those on this side of the camera, but all of us are willing to put ourselves out there and we're willing to become known, well known, a little known, but associated with teaching the message of Hashem. That's the taich, that's the pshat. Agad la, Hashem says, I'll only be great, shemecha, through your name. So as much as you hesitate, as much as you're uncomfortable, you don't want to be the brand, when people recognize you as saying, my message, agad la, I will be great through shemecha. That's the second. Third, and then we're going to move on, I promise. Lech lecha me'aretzcha, Rabbi Sacks, to start the parsha. There's another interpretation. Lech lecha, go by yourself. Only a person willing to stand alone, singular and unique, can worship the God who is alone, singular and unique. Only one able to leave behind the natural source of identity, home, family, culture, and society, can encounter Hashem, who stands above and beyond nature. Avram's children are summoned to be the people that defy the laws of nature. They refuse to define themselves as the products of nature. That is not to say that economic or biological or psychological factors have no part in play in human behavior. They do. But with sufficient imagination, determination, discipline, and courage, we rise above them. Avram does, so at most times will his children. Lech lecha in this sense means being prepared to take an often lonely journey. Lech lecha. Be willing to go by yourself. To be a child of Avram is to have the courage to be different, to challenge the idols of the age, whatever the idols and whichever the age. In an era of polytheism that meant seeing the universe as the product of a single creative will, and therefore not meaningless, but coherent, meaningful. When power was worshipped and men constructing a society that cared for the powerless, the widow, orphan, and stranger. During centuries in which the mass of mankind was sunk in ignorance, and men honoring education as the key to human dignity. In ages of racial, radical individualism, like today, it means knowing that we are not what we own, but what we share. Not what we buy, but what we give. To be a Jew is to be willing to hear the still small voice of eternity urging us to travel, move, go on ahead, continuing Avram's journey towards the unknown destination as far at the far horizon of hope. Part of the mission, part of what Avram gave us, his legacy, is lech lecha, a willingness to go at it alone. You know, the Jewish views, I don't mean the newspaper, although I'm happy to promote it, the Jewish views of the world, the Jewish view of the world is increasingly less popular. How we see things versus the way the world does. It's harder to hold fast to our convictions. But Avram, we'll discuss in a moment, one of the names of Avram is Avram Ha'ivri, Me'ever. The whole world was on this side, Avram was willing to stand on that side. Do we have the courage to be willing to go against the culture, the zeitgeist? Do we have the culture, the courage to be willing to stand against what the world is saying? What the world is saying. Do we have the courage to be the true progeny of Avram, to be willing to stand me'aver on the other side? Sefer Yonah proudly declares, Ivri Anochi, V'yes Hashem. I am an Ivri, and I worship Hashem. I don't care what the world says. I don't care what the polls say. I don't care what became popular. I follow what Hashem tells me, our definitions, our values, our priorities, our principles. I follow Hashem, Ivri Anochi. I am a descendant of Avram, Ha'ivri. I have within me the DNA of lech lecha, the willingness to stand alone, just like Avram. Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis. Says Hashem to Avram, he promises him, I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to bless you. I'll make your name great. We've unpacked the beginning of this parsha many times. You could go online. You could listen to previous shiurim. We're going to try to not spend a lot of time in the beginning of the parsha because we have in the past, even though I'm tempted to tell you some of my favorites right now, but I'm behaving. I'm not going to. I just want to tell you a new idea I had. Now, brace yourselves, and it's good you're sitting down. Original Ephraim Goldberg thought. There are not a lot of them. You come to the Parsha class every week and you see I carry all these farim, not just to impress you with my muscles, but because I don't have original ideas. If I have anything to contribute, I'm good. I'm not a producer, I'm a distributor. I'm good at bringing the ideas of others. Every now and then, I get lucky and I have an original thought. So I had an original thought on Sunday. And my original thought was this. I was learning the Parsha, Shnai Mikra, the first Aliyah for the first day for Sunday. Hashem gives Avram a bracha. And what's his bracha? I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to bless you. I'll make your name great. Says Rashi on these words. He gives several explanations, but one of them is, Davar Acher, Ve'escha l'goy gadol, Ze sha'omrim, Elokei Avram. I'll make you a great name. I'll make you a large nation. How is that fulfilled? In our davening, we say the God of Avram. Va'varechacha, I'll bless you. Ze sha'omrim, Elokei Yitzchak. Va'agadla shemecha, Ze sha'omrim, Elokei Yaakov. Look at Rashi, I say to myself. Hashem tells Avram, I'm going to give you three brachas. What are the three brachas? Eschal l'goy gadol, avarechacha, agad l'shemecha. What are the fulfillment of those three brachas? That in our davening, we associate God as the God of Avram. That's a bracha to Avram. But also the God of Yitzchak, the God of Yaakov. And I said to myself, one second, how's that a bracha to Avram? God says to Avram, I have a bracha for you. In the future, they're going to reference me relative to you, to your son, and to your grandson. What do you see from here is the biggest bracha a person can have and want is the pride you get that your children are continuing in your footsteps and in your way. The pride, the joy, the satisfaction, the fulfillment that they will associate God not only with you, but that your children and grandchildren will live such lives, they'll associate God with them. I had that thought Sunday morning and I shared it Sunday night at the Hachtara, our yeshiva of South Florida, Medrash Chaim. Our yeshiva installed our new Rosh Yeshiva of Yehuda Willig Shlita. We're so blessed, such an incredible, such a charismatic, such chayin, such a talmid chacham. What a leader. You're going to see the yeshiva is going to blow up. It's incredible what's happening at the yeshiva. So I introduced his father, Rav Mordechai Willig, my Rebbe, Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva's Rabbi Tzvi Kochanan at YU. And I said this insight. I said, the biggest bracha Rebbe, Rabbi Mordechai Willig, for a long time we've said, Elokei Rav Mordechai Willig. But now, with your son at the helm of our yeshiva, Elokei Rav Yehuda Willig. And what could be a bigger source of nachas or bracha? So this indeed is a bracha to Avram. What do you mean, what's the bracha to Avram? Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, that's also a bracha to Avram. Original thought, take it or leave it if you like it. Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Moving right along. Turn the page. We're introduced to Avram. Right away, we've got a story. Avram, there's a famine in the land. Hashem tells Avram, Lech Lecha, they're headed south. They go even further south. Why? There's a famine in the land, not the first or the last that we'll hear about. Where can they find sustenance and nourishment? There's a famine in the land. Avram goes down to Egypt to live there. Ki chaved harav baretz. The famine was severe in the land. And what happens? And as he approaches to arrive in Egypt, he says to his wife, I just realized something. You're not bad looking. I just realized something. You're not bad looking. That's what he says when they arrive. They land, there are customs, they're about to enter Egypt, and he says to her, huh, you know, I never noticed, but you're kind of pretty. The Shadchan wasn't lying. What's going on over here? So I want to share with you an insight. Brand new Sefer, hot off the press. I'm not even sure it's in Sfarim stores yet. Halekach V'alibov, another one of my Rebbeim, Rav Avram Shor Shlita. I was zochah to get it when his son came for the Bar Mitzvah this past Shabbos. Halekach V'alibov. I hope it is already in stores. Everything he writes and publishes is absolutely fantastic. V'ikasher ekriv lavo mitzrayimah. Rashi brings the Medrash. Ad achshav lo hikir b'mitoch tzindiyah shebishneihem. What do you mean he never noticed how pretty? Avram is our forefather. He's our role model. He never said to his wife, you're beautiful. You look fantastic. He never said, not only when she asked him, how do I look? He was never smart enough to actually preempt it by saying at the bar mitzvah, you look beautiful. V'achshav hikir b'yidei maisa, and it's only because they landed and they're about to go into Egypt, that's what stimulates and motivates him to say, wow, you're not bad looking. So another pshat Rashi says is, you know why he notices it now? It's not that he didn't notice she's always beautiful. Here's what he noticed now. Everyone else shows the signs of travel. Nobody looks good coming off the plane from Israel to Israel. Nobody. I don't care which class you sat in. I don't care what lounge you tried to freshen up in. Nobody looks good. Except, of course, my wife, my daughters. They look fantastic. But nobody else looks good. Travel is exhausting. Travel takes its toll. And travel is on display in how we look. So Avram, who probably feels like a mess, looks like a mess, is falling apart. He looks over at Sarah and he says, one second, why do you look so beautiful? We just came off a long caravan, camel, horse, what it took to get down here to Egypt. And as we're going through customs, he says, you show no impact from the travel. The third pshat is, Avram says, of course he always noticed she was beautiful. He was never worried about it because he lived in a place they were safe. But as we're about to enter Egypt, place of moral depravity and corruption, he says, I just realized your beauty is going to become an issue here. Hagon Rav Meir Shapiro Milublin, quotes Rav Shor, Higid B'Shem HaRebbe HaKadosh Merzhin, L'Tarits Kushas HaMefarshim, Halo Asa L'Kadosh Isha Ad She'irena. So the classic kasha that's asked is, the Gemara tells us, a man is not allowed to get married without seeing the prospective bride. Why? The Gemara tells us in Kedushin. Because Shema Tizgana, maybe he'll be repulsed by her, and you'll violate V'hatzlo'echa Kamocha. In other words, what do you mean? How would you ever get married without seeing the woman? The answer is you're allowed to get married through a shliach. So let's say I hear about a prospective mate halfway around the world, and I don't want to go, I can't go. So what I do is I appoint an agent on my behalf, I give them the ring, I say, travel to this destination, find this woman, and betroth her for me. And when the agent gives her the ring, and the betrothal is not to the agent until they come back, I'm married to the woman immediately through the act of the agent. That's what the Gemara cautions and says, don't do that if you haven't seen the woman first. Why? Because what happens when the agent comes back with the woman, and now I see her, and she looks nothing like her shidduch picture. Shidduch picture was professional photographer, Photoshop, the right lighting, the right moment. And now I see her, she looks nothing like this shidduch picture. I say, never mind. It's not very nice. It's not very kind. It's a violation of Ahavta L'Rayecha Kamocha. Or she will see me and say, he looks nothing like. The Gemara is not as worried about that for whatever reasons I am not going to get into now. But the Ahavta L'Rayecha Kamocha would be violated. So how in the world could Avram have ever married Sarah if he fulfilled all Torah without having seen her or noticed her beauty beforehand? Tve'em ez rosa kodam shekidsha. Rak Avram avinu chashv shiofi umach mashachut shechesed mashach aleh. So the answer is Avram did notice. He saw her beauty before they got married, before they wed. It's just that he thought her beauty came from what? Her character. He was drawn to her character, to her charisma, to her kindness. Dugmas mashadar shu chazal al Esther. Shirak rokas haisa v'chut shal chesed mashach aleha. Some of the Gemara testifies about Esther, Queen Esther, her beauty came from her kindness. Avram always thought, why is she so beautiful? She's got such chayin, because the chesed she does. But now he gets to a place that's not deserving and that she shouldn't do any chesed. And therefore, he realizes her beauty stems not from her chayin and her chesed. Her beauty stems from what? Beauty. And now he's worried. V'lachein ba achshav hasha lidog avur yafya. Nimtzu beiz hapirushim echad. Aidei shehikir ki yifas mareh be'etzem. Because he now saw that her beauty was intrinsic, now he realizes, I've got to worry. If her beauty only stemmed from her chesed, so in a place that admires and values chesed, they'll see her as beautiful. But because her beauty is intrinsic, now I have to worry that even in Egypt where they don't appreciate chesed, they're still going to see her as beautiful, and they may come to try to molest her, rape her, take her from me. That's the answer of the Rav Meir Shapiro. B'sefer Nachlas Yankov, the Nesivos, brings from the Arizal another pshat, says Rav Avmishor. Listen to this fascinating and fantastic insight. Listen to what Rav Avmishor says. He says, now he realizes that it's not Sarah that's got the problem, he's got the problem. Why does he have a problem? Because he says, until now where I've lived with Sarah, I don't notice beauty. Avram is a righteous person living a righteous life. Of course, he's a healthy man, but he says he's not drawn by or distracted by the Yetzihara. But now, as he's about to enter Egypt, he's on the border of Egypt, he's at the customs of Egypt, and he says all of a sudden, I feel something in me. I'm noticing my wife's beauty more than I usually do. There's something in this country and land that brings out of you the Yetzihara. All of a sudden, I'm now struggling with Shmiras Enayim. I'm now struggling with Shmiras Abris. All of a sudden, I feel I'm struggling with noticing beauty with the Yetzihara. This is a land of Tumah. This is a land of Tumah. Umamela nifgam kedushaso al yadam v'nigram shehikir ba. Umamela yadam izesh etzarch lidog al yafya ki yahargu os al davar ishto. If I'm in such a place whose energy is having an impact on me, says Avram, if I'm in such a land, you go to Times Square. You shouldn't go to Times Square. You can't go to Times Square today. It's unbelievable what's going on in Times Square. The state of dress and undress, the activities that are happening in public. There are certain places you go to and certain energies and obstacles and impulses are impossible to avoid. They're unavoidable. They're undeniable. There's an energy to that place. Avram sensed it the moment he arrived in Egypt. And because he sensed it in him the moment he arrived, he was worried for his wife's safety. So it wasn't his wife he was worried about. Yes, that too, as an extension of what he was worried within himself, because he noticed it. Hagonim Shlomo Kluger Mosif, Odenikud, the Kiyadua Shekot Tzadik Mashpi al Sviva Shalo, Vekoshken Shezchusa Magen al Kohan Shebeso, Imken Choshev Avram Avinu, She Tzidkoso Tagin al Sarah, Shavachad Lo Yikosha Ba, Memelo Lo Dogala Ad Achshav, Va Achshav Kevin Shehikir Ba, Ra Avram Avinu Shamakam Mashpi al Lov, She Nifkam Tzidkoso. Avram thought he had an impact on his surroundings. The impact he had on his surroundings would protect his wife. Now that he feels my surroundings are having an impact on me, I can no longer rely on that to protect my wife. Now is when he's worried, and that's why he goes to extreme measures in order to try to protect her. Perek Yudalad. I told you we're going to move ahead from the beginning of the parsha to try to cover new ground. Perek Yudalad, the war of the kings. The war of the kings. The four kings and the five kings. A war in which Lot is taken captive. Four and five kings. Perek Yudalad, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Skip right to Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayavo apalit vayagid la Avram ha'ivri. The palit came. Who's the palit? Palit surprise winner. Who's the palit? A fugitive. The one who ran away. The refugee. The fugitive. And he came to tell Avram. How is Avram identified as? Avram ha'ivri. V'hu shochin beloni mamre. This is where Avram was dwelling at the time. And he tells them, Achi Ashkov Achi Aner, Arvein Bali Bris Avram, Vayishma Avram, Avram hears Ki Nishba Achiv, that his brother was held hostage, his brother was taken captive, Vayarek Eschanichav, he armed his disciples, Yelidei Beso, that had been born in his house, Shmona Asar Shlosh Meres Vayidiv Adan, 318, and that's it, he got involved. He got involved. Says the Midrash Rabbah, Rebuta Omer, the whole world is on one side. Why is Avram identified here as Avram Ivri? We mentioned it before when we began Lech Lecha. The whole world is on one side, and Avram is willing to stand on the other. Asks Rav Shmuel Berenbaum, the Hilgat Tefer Shmuel, Tzorachi and Lama Davka Kan Kishigida Ogla Avram Shanish Balot. Who's this Palit? Who's the refugee? Og. Og, who will become the king of Bashan. Og, who is the king of Bashan. Og, Dafka, when Og comes, the Torah goes out of its way to identify Avram as Avram ha'ivri. Why now? Why here? We We've already talked about Avram, that he wasn't called to Ivri until now. Why specifically in the conversation with Og? Why specifically part of this narrative of rescuing his nephew Lot? Why now is Avram called Ivri? Says the Mir Rosh Hashiva, "Delechora kishyesh melchama gedola, ma yoel lahagid laadam shenish ba'achiv, ki b'matzav kazeh shasakana lechora eim alasos." Aval itzal Avram, haven og shekamosh yesh laAvram haIvri akoach li lachem neged kol haolam kishezeno gelug emunaso kamochein tia lo koach shleman mitzvah pidgin shvuyim hu yetzel melchama af keneged kol haolam. I'm going to give you two answers to the question. Again, the question was, Avram is called Ivri because when the whole world is on this side, he's willing to stand on the other. Why is he called that specifically here? So the first answer Shmuel Berenbaum gives is because normally someone comes to tell you a massive war has broken out, hostages have been taken. The fact that one of them is your brother, but what can you do about it? There's nothing you can do. Why do you need to be told specifically one is your brother? The reason here Avram is called to Ivri is the same way that Avram could resist. He has the tenacity, the resolve, the strength, the courage of his conviction to take on the whole world. They're on this side and he's on the other. If his brother was taken hostage, he will take on the entire world. And that's why the introduction to your brother's been taken captive is Avram is HaIvri. Just like he's willing to take on the whole world about paganism and idolatry, he'll take on the whole world to liberate, to get back his brother. U'kashem she'Avram Yoso Yelid, Shiber Salme Aviv, the Lachain Lachem Keneged Nimrod. Avram took on his father, he took on the idols, he took on Nimrod, he was thrown into the Kivshan Aish. Avram wasn't afraid. The same strength, the same courage of his conviction, that same resolve that left him isolated and alone, Ivri may Aver, he's willing to take on the whole world about religion, philosophy, morality, and ethics, and he's willing to take on the whole world in order to get his nephew back. But I want to tell you a second answer. It doesn't appear in Tefes Shmuel. A second answer. You know why this section specifically is introduced with that Avram is HaIvri? Because you know what Avram might have been tempted to say? Why was Lot taken captive? Why is Lot no longer with him? We skipped this part of the parsha. Lot's his beloved nephew. He grew up in Avram's home, under his watch, in his embrace. Avram trained him, and indeed he learned well. Lot will later show, display tremendous hospitality. He learned to do chesed in his uncle's home. So if Avram raised Lot, why is Lot not with him? Because Lot unfortunately lost his way. Lot preferred to put his lot, see what I did there? Lot preferred to put his lot with the people of Sodom. He was drawn to Sodom. He wanted to live in that corrupt society more than continue to drink from the fountain of his uncle Avram. And Avram and Lot, Avram senses this. Lot's losing his way. How did he first sense that? Lot's flock, his sheep, and his ewes. Is that a plural of ewe, ewes? They were grazing on stolen land. They were grazing from other people's property, which was to steal that vegetation. Avram says, I can't be associated with you. You're hurting the brand and the image. Remember what we began with? Va'agadla shemecha. God says to Avram, I will go great when everyone knows your name. So Avram doesn't really like it, but he says, fine, there'll be an Abraham Accords. Fine, there'll be the Torah of Avram. Fine, I'll be the Avram on Goyim. My name, if I'm the brand, because that helps you, God, I'm willing to do it. But now Avram realizes, Lot, you're hurting the brand. You're compromising the brand. You're stealing, and you're engaged in immoral activity. And if I'm connected and associated with you, that brings the brand down. So we've got to part ways. We've got to go two different directions. We got to go two different directions. So now he hears that his nephew Lot, who had begun the trajectory of a bad direction, has now wound up hostage. He's been taken captive. If you're someone else, what might you say? This is what happens. This is what becomes when you leave your uncle Avram, when you turned, when you lost your way, when Lot put his lot with the people of Sodom. I'm sorry to hear it. It's a tragedy. I'll mourn and grieve. I'll publish a eulogy. But this is what happens. This is what happens. Avram could have easily dismissed. Avram could have easily said, this is what he deserves. What does he do instead? And why might he have said that? Because he's Avram HaIvri. I stand alone on this side. Lot went to go be with everyone else on the other side. This is what happens to those on the other side. Is that what Avram says? No. He says, I don't care where he's standing, this side, that side, the other side. My nephew, my brother was taken captive. I'm going to get him. And that's why the Torah here calls Lot Achiv. Is Lot his brother? No, Lot's his nephew. But a Jew, every other Jew is our brother, is our sister. There is no, he's a distant cousin, I'm not related, I don't even know him, I never met him. Every hostage is our brother. That's why we daven so hard, fought so hard, advocated so hard. Baruch Hashem, the 20 living hostages are home, but we can't let up and we have to continue until the 13 remains are returned. Who knows what's going to be today after Hamas pulled that stunt last night, claiming to return the body of another hostage, when instead they returned remains of one who was already given back. Not anew, just torturing that family more, torturing our people more, and violating the ceasefire. They first buried it and dug it up, and Israel has it all on drone footage. It's horrible what they did. Horrible, even. Every time you think their evil and wickedness can't sink any lower, they find a way. They find a way. They have to be obliterated from the earth. What they did is so horrific. Those 13 bodies that are still there, Achiv, those are our brothers. Those remains also, because their parents and families can't grieve and mourn fully until they're back. And Achiv, those are our brothers. Those are our brothers who are being held captive. And we, like Avram, who cares? Yarmulke, no Yarmulke, religious, not religious, vote this way, vote that way. Who cares? Who did Avram go rescue and fight for? Lot. Avram HaIvri, the same Avram who says, I'm willing to stand on this side and the whole world is on that side. That same Avram went to go fight. Why? Achiv, because that's what you do. That's what you do for a brother, and that's what Avram brought. So we asked the question, two questions. Why is he called brother when it's a nephew? And why are we introduced with Avram's identity of Ivri, Davke here? Shmuel Barimam gave one answer, which is that Avram brought the same tenacity, the same energy that he brought to being Ivri is what he brought to bring home his brother. And the second answer is, I would have thought he had every reason in the world to not get involved. But he gets involved anyway, and he goes. Perek Yedalad, Pasuk Yedalad. So what does he do? We just read. He gets everyone in his home, and he goes in order to fight. Back to the Teferis Shmuel. Shmuel Berenbaum. Perek Yedalad, Pasuk Yedalad. Sorry. Vayishma Avram Kinish Ba'achiv. Yesh lovim nama nakar kosa kinish ba'achiv. Why brother? Could have said, ki anashim achim anachnu. Kan, when he's talking about he was captured. Why here? Yeshlomer the Bator Lalamed, Mimasha Avram Avinu Hechnes Atzmal Sakana, Anesan Hare Menachem Ischiosov Shal Adam. Avram put himself into danger, going to bat, going to fight. He put himself in danger. And normally you can't do that. The guiding principle ordinarily is Liolam Al Yamud Adam Mimakam Sakana, Lomar Shosim Lones, Shema Eim Osim Lones. Normally we say, you don't rely on a miracle. And if a miracle is done, it is depleting your merits. The answer is, even though you're relying on a miracle, and even though if you get that miracle, maybe it is depleting, maybe it is diminishing your merits. Doesn't matter. When it comes to a brother, that's what it takes. We don't leave anyone behind. We don't leave anyone behind. So Avram doesn't hesitate. And he might have said, four kings against five kings, rescuing my nephew, that's impossible. It's impossible. Can't do it. But you see, Avram never hesitated or demurred. He said, it's my brother, my nephew, whatever it takes. I don't care if I'm going to have to rely on a miracle. I don't care if it will take away from my merits, not leaving me many left. It doesn't matter. This is what a brother does for another brother. Rabbi Sachs also has a comment here on this. Rabbi Sachs says the following. Vayerdof, he went in pursuit. He went in pursuit. The unique structure of Torah spirituality, its calibrated tension between the universality of justice and the particularity of love, is the most compelling way I know of giving religious expression to both our common humanity and our religious difference. Consider the life of Avram. Readers of Tanakh are so familiar with his story, they often fail to notice how strange it is. We're so familiar with the story, we've been learning it in many cases since we're little children, that we fail to realize how peculiar it is. Here's the father of monotheism, yet in the text itself, Avram breaks no idol, challenges no polytheist, establishes no religious movement, other than an ambiguous hint that Avram took with him on his journey the people they had gathered, HaNefesh HaShe'asu B'charon, which may refer to converts, but may equally merely refer to the servants, they attract no disciples. He lives among people whose belief and practices are alien to his own, yet he doesn't reprimand them, except when the servants of Avimelech, with whom he had made a treaty, sees one of the wells he had dug. He holds them to the standards of simple human morality, not those of divine ethics or holiness. When his nephew Lot chooses to live among the people of Sodom, about who the Torah says they're evil, Avram doesn't even criticize him, nor does he condemn them. To the contrary, he fights a battle on their behalf. When in the next parasha he hears that God is planning to punish them, he pleads for them. Avram doesn't seek to impose his views on others, yet his contemporaries sense there's something special and godly about him. Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem salutes him. The Chitim call him a prince of Hashem in our midst. Avram impresses his contemporaries by the way he lives, not the way he forces or even urges others to live. Avram doesn't proselytize. Avram leads and lives by example, and the results are people want to be more like him. Perek Yudalet Pasuk Chaf. At the end of this episode, and rescuing his nephew, and the victory in the war of the four kings and the five kings, Torah tells us that he interacts with Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem. Malki Tzedek, the king of Shalem. Where is Shalem? Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim doesn't appear in the Torah, the word. But there are hints and allusions. This is one, the king of Shalem. He takes out bread and wine. This Malki Tzedek is a Kohen Lekel Elyon. He is a priest to God. Vayivarcheu vayomar, he gives Avram a bracha. Baruch Avram Lekel Elyon, Konei Shemayim Va'aretz. Blessed is Avram of God. Blessed is Abraham of God, the Most High, the maker of heaven and earth. And blessed, Ubaruch Kel Elyon, Asher Migein Tzarecha B'Yadecha, Vayitein Lo Meiser Mikol. And he gave Meiser, he gave a tenth of everything. Shmuel Berman points out this notion of Meiser. The Avos all were careful to give. Avram Avinu, it says, Vayitein Lo Meiser Mikol. With the Yitzchak, it says that 100 measures, Hashem blessed him. It says, Yitzchak gave Meiser. Yaakov, Kol Asher Titein Li, Aser Asrenu Lach. The Torah makes a point of telling us that our patriarchs and matriarchs, our forefathers, were all incredibly generous. They gave 10% away. They gave 10% away. V'chein Mavur, She'avos His Asru Ma'od. Ba'avram K'siv Ba'avram Kaved Ma'od. Through their generosity and their giving, they got. When you give, you get. Hashem is the senior partner in all that we do. He says you can keep 90%. None of the success would happen without him. And even though he says he's the senior partner, he says you could keep 90%. All I ask for, and not even for me, give it away to my other children, is 10%. It says of Shmuel Berenbaum, you see from here that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Torah goes out of its way to tell us, they all gave 10%. They all tithe. They all gave Meiser. I was talking to someone recently who told me, whatever business deal he was with, he did with someone, and they only gave him 10%. And he said, 10% is so little. It deserves so much more. And then he turned to me and realized, I just realized, when it's a person giving me a piece of the deal, 10% is so little. But when you ask me to give tzedakah, 10% feels like so much. Why is it when we think we deserve, 10% is too little? But when Hashem says, take a part of what I've given you, and give it back, 10% now feels like it's too much. If the Jewish world would just give 10% of their after-tax income, we could solve the tuition crisis, this crisis, the other crisis, any crisis where money is the problem, if we would only truly tithe 10% of our after-tax income. There's enormous wealth in the Jewish people. And by the way, I often find the people with the smaller income, more fixed income, are more careful to be hitting the mark of 10% than the people with the enormous return and enormous income, people who are blessed with tremendous resources, who are making on that money, who, because they have so much, they give a lot and it looks like a lot, but it doesn't come close to 10%. If the Jewish billionaires in the world all gave 10%, forget the pledge of Bill Gates to give most of your wealth. If they just give 10%, we could solve every Jewish problem. That's the way of the Avos. And that's why the Torah goes out of its way to tell us, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all three, they were careful and they gave. Reb Soloveitchik also has a comment. I can't even find anyone anymore. Reb Soloveitchik has a comment here as well on this conversation. Baruch Kel Elyon. Malki Tzedek first blesses Avram, and then he blesses God. Blessed be Avram, and then he blesses God. Shouldn't the order have been reversed? To address this question, we have to understand the concept of blessing God in general. How can temporal man, flesh and blood, approach the everlasting King of Kings, creator of the world, and bless him? How can you give a blessing to Hashem? The blessings we give one another, we understand. You're blessing me, that if I'm missing something, I shouldn't be missing it. So you're giving me a bracha, good health, nachas, money. Hashem is the source, omnipotent, infinite creator of the universe. He's missing nothing. So what does it mean to bench, to give a bracha to Hashem? Writes Rabbi Soloveitchik, the answer is that man must provide assistance, as it were, to the master of the universe. Man must help God reveal his presence in the world. For Hashem to have dira b'tachtonim, for Hashem to have a divine presence here on earth, to be available, accessible for people to see and believe, he needs us as his agents, his ambassadors. That's a big theme of the parsha. Avram, be willing to let your name be great, because that's the only way that people will find me. Hashem needs us to be his agents, his ambassadors. Hashem needs us to bench him. The bracha we give him that he needs from us is for us to be agents, ambassadors, to help represent the brand. Hashem told Avram his assignment is to make God's presence known to the world. Hashem must dissipate the clouds that obscure God from human perception. Before Malki Tzedek blessed Hashem, he first wanted to bless Avram to be successful in spiritually conquering the world. Through Avram's own success, Hashem would also be blessed. And that's why the order was, first he blessed Avram, and then he blesses Hashem. But it's interesting, because while Rabbi Soloveitchik finds a beautiful meaning in it, the Gemara itself is very critical of Avram for it. Gemara Nedarim Daf Lamed Beis. The Gemara Nedarim Daf Lamed Beis tells us, Pikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lo Tzi Kuna Misham. Hashem was ready to take away the kuna from Malki Tzedek. He blew it. Hu Kohen Lekel Yon Kevin Shiktim Birchaz Avram Birchaz HaMakom Hu Tzi Ami Avram. Once it proceeded, first Malki Tzedek gave a bracha to Avram before Hashem, Hashem withdrew it from Avram. Vayomer Baruch Avram Lekel Yon Kanesh HaMayim Varet Baruch Kel Yon Amar Lo Avram V'chi Makdim Birchaz Eved LeBirchaz Kono Miyad Nas La Avram Shinem Anum Hashem. And there's a whole conversation, a whole back and forth. The Pri Megadim and Orchaim and Simon Kuf Ayin Dalad. The Holy Pri Megadim, Yevr Yosef ben Meir Teumim, Lemberg in the 18th century. Kishas Shose Kos. What's the proper way? We'll end with this. Not literally, because it's a little too early in the morning, but we'll end with this. What is the proper way to make a L'chaim? Often people hold up the glass and they say, L'chaim, Bar Mitzvah, you should get nachas, your son should make you proud. L'chaim, the granddaughter should grow up, make you proud. L'chaim, to the Yurtzeit, the neshama should have an aliyah. Then they make a shahakol, and they drink. Is it proper? L'chaim, the engagement, you should build a bayis nema, be Yisrael. You're giving, the Gemara's critical. Gemara says, how could Malki Tzedek first bless Avram before he blessed God? The Gemara's critical and says, in fact, they paid a price. So what's the proper order when you're making a l'chaim? Should you first make the bracha, blessing God, take a sip, and then make the l'chaim? Or do you make the l'chaim and then the bracha? Everything there's halacha. For everything there's a Torah. Says the Pri Megadim, Kesha shosa kos mevorach tchila v'yito ma'at v'achar kach yomer l'chaim v'chidome k'kavet shamayim adif v'yesh omrim tchila l'chaim kavet abrios gadol. Some say no, first make the l'chaim because kavet abrios, honoring people, comes first. And he goes back and forth about this, but the Pri Megadim brings it down as a discussion. Shai Knesset HaGedola also weighs in, li nira she'im b'kach klum, adarabba, roi lahaktim lomim mesubin b'simchascheim, v'achikach levarach v'leshtos, t'gadol kavod abriyos sh'docha los haseh she'betorah. We know we have a halachic principle, kavod abriyos supersedes even a lav. So if that's the case, first make the l'chaim and honor the person, even before you take the sip, even before you drink. Believe it or not, the Shevet HaLevi, Rav Ozner also weighs in, Shevet HaLevi, Chelek Gimel, Simen, Tzadi Dalad, Be'inyan Amiras L'chaim, he quotes the Pri Megadim, Shekhan Sagadola, what's the proper order? What's the proper way? Kaf HaChaim as well, everybody weighs in. What's the proper way to make a L'chaim? All based on these psukim, all based on our Parsha. We'll end with one last one. I know we're already over time. Perek Tes Vav Pasuk Vav. Achar Advar Ma'ila, Hayadvar Hashem al Avram. After all these matters, the trip down to Egypt, the war of the four kings, the five kings, the rescue of Lot, the conversation with Malkitzeh, the king of stone. After all this, Hayadvar Hashem al Avram. Avram has a vision. B'machazeli mor al tira Avram. Anochi magen lach. Avram, don't be afraid. I'm your shield. Schar chahar ben ma'od. You have a lot of reward. We started with Rabbi Sacks. For today, we'll end with Rabbi Sacks. And he says the following. Al tira. Short and sweet. It is after the face of the sword to save Lot. It is after he faces the sword to save Lot that Hashem tells Avram, I'm your shield. Each year we tell the story of Avram's call from God to leave his home and travel. El ha'aretz asher ar'eka. I call that the journey into insecurity. Rabbi Sacks calls it the journey into insecurity. Life has been highly insecure for Jews for 4,000 years. We're still on that journey. A lot of people are struck by the history of Jewish suffering. I'm always struck by the history of Jewish recovery from suffering. While the rest of the world marvels at the history of Jewish suffering, Rabbi Sacks says, I marvel at the history of the Jewish recovery from suffering. This Lech Lecha, Hashem tells Avram to leave, and it is on a journey into insecurity. What gives a people the strength to keep going? It is that feeling that you can't face the future without fear if you know that you're not alone. It is that famous line in Tehillim Chaf Gimel, what we're learning in Emunashir. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I feel no evil, for you are with me. That, I think, says Rabbi Sacks, is the positive reason for faith in the 21st century. We can handle anything so long as we have the humility to know that we are answerable to something much greater than ourselves. This journey of Lech Lecha is the journey into insecurity. We want security, we don't get security. This is the journey into insecurity. And you know what? Only when you're willing to take the journey into insecurity can you feel secure. If you think that you can be secure, you'll be insecure. But when you realize and you're willing to take the journey into insecurity, only then into the arms of Hashem can you feel secure. Mirtzah Hashem, we'll pick up with next time. Have a wonderful day. We should hear Besaras Tovos, Yeshuas, V'Nechamos.